This is episode 357, dated Friday, April 26th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. This is episode 357. Dated Friday, April 26th, 2024. With me, as always, Peter O'Toole, all the way from Coos Bay, Oregon. Peter, what's going on today?
It's pouring rain here. Spring has not fully arrived here yet, but it's supposed to get nice over the next week. And I am, settling into my new job, and things are a bit crazy, but they're finally getting, some things are getting straightened out. So all is pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. Here in New England, we're still waiting for spring to get a grip on New England. We've had a very chilly spring here for the most part. It's unbelievable. It's about time we warmed up. Anyway, before we continue with our guest, let me thank people and say hi to some people. We have Raymond Gay, our executive editor and producer. We have Tom and Lynn from the Rosie's Place chat line. They post our programs up there. Also, the media outlets, thank you very much for airing us when you do. And, of course, we have Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, who archives our programs. Just go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Trish, our host. Thank you for taking the time today to be with us, and also to Brad for streaming us on ACB Media 5. And because he does that, let me give out my email address for those people who don't get the show from my list directly. That is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Tell us what you think of the show. We'd like to hear from our listeners. And speaking of listeners, let me say hi to a listener who wrote in with some very positive thoughts for our last show, and that would be Joe Elizabeth Pinto. Thank you very much for responding, and hi to you. We're going to be talking today about a subject matter that potentially affects all of us if we're not careful, and it's something that's part of life. And it's very scary to go through. I know about this firsthand. Fortunately, I straightened it out quickly when it happened to me years ago. And that is the subject of identity theft. It is not a pretty picture when you experience it. Our guest, Deborah Joyce, is an author. She wrote a book about identity theft. It's called Identity Theft, The Search for Justice. And Deborah is also a columnist in my magazine, Consumer Vision. Those of you who receive Consumer Vision have read Deborah's columns. She titles her series, The Identity Vault. Deborah, welcome to In Perspective.
Thank you for having me, Bob. Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening.
So you know a lot about this subject, and this is why we asked you to come on, because it's very important that listeners, especially those who don't know, pretty much learn some things on how to be proactive and how to protect themselves from identity theft.
Most people don't take it seriously because they don't think it will ever happen to them. It happens to somebody else.
And you raised a good point before we started the program about how AI has taken over. And I agreed with you about social media being the cause for the increase in identity theft. And you mentioned an example that's very, very customary right now, where IA calls you and identifies you, and you're compelled to respond when they say your name. Tell us how we can avoid and distinguish that kind of behavior.
Well, it's really going to be difficult to understand that that person on the other end of the phone is not even a real person. It's a computer. So if somebody asks you, they call you up and they say, "Hi, Bob. Is this Bob?" Don't say yes. You don't want to do that because they're recording you saying yes after you say your name. So that gives them the ability to hook it up where they can do something bad, like buy something in your name, and you say yes, so you've just given permission. But you really can't do that. So the best thing to do, somebody says, "Hi, Bob. Is this Bob Bronco?" You say, "Who is this?" Or you say, "No, hold on, I'll go get Bob." But don't say yes. It's terrible that you have to do that now, but you do.
So when will we know that it's a real person or not a real person? In other words, if they ask me if I'm Bob or is this Bob, and I say, "Who is this?" What would they likely say next to indicate whether or not this is a person that I should speak to or if it's AI?
So if it's something that you're really not sure about and you want to be extra careful, ask them to give you their telephone number and you will call them back. Say, "You know, I'm really busy right now, but I'd be glad to call you back. Could you give me your number and I'll call you back in 5 minutes or something like that. This way you have an idea that it's a real person. And it's a real company. If they say no or they can't do it, hang up. Think about it. If they're legitimate, they're going to want your business. They'll give you the number. Correct?
Absolutely. You're right. But I hang up on a lot of these. I hang up on a lot of these calls anyway, because I don't want to hear the spiels.
No. The other thing you can do is if it's a company that you do business with on a regular basis, you kind of know who the person is. You have a contact person at that business. So that's another way that you can protect yourself as well.
Peter? Did Peter leave us?
No. He's unmuted.
So, all right. So, Peter, just interrupt us when you fix the situation that you're in. Obviously, you're not hearing us at the moment. Or if you are, I'm sorry, you are hearing us, but you are not responding. We cannot hear you.
Well, I don't know what's going on, but I'm here.
There
now.
You are.
There you are. You're all set now, Peter.
Yeah. So part of the problem is I missed what you asked. So if I'm repeating myself with questions, forgive me. So my first question to you is, who is Guy?
Oh, that's just a fictitious name that I used for the person that stole my identity and my money.
And talk about how that happened. How did that happen? What was the process by which he did?
You meet people, you become friends with the person, you've known them for years. Or let's say you have hired a caregiver who is in your home, either helping you because you're hurt or helping a loved one. And you tend to let your guard down. I knew this person for 11 years. I met him singing karaoke, and he became a friend. And I met his family, and I hung out with his friends, and he was a piano player, and we were just friends. But when I started losing my eyesight, and I couldn't see what was going on, I didn't realize that he was stealing my information, that I couldn't tell. Not that I had anything out in the open, but when you have a friend, if you have a visitor, you have a friend, you go to the bathroom. You go let the dog out. I'll be right back. I'm just going to do whatever. You leave the room. That's all they need is 10 seconds to get out their phone, take a picture, and your information is taken.
So what do you do in order to prevent that from happening? Obviously, we all need somebody to talk with who visits us, obviously. So what would be your best course of action for people so that they won't
I lock up everything now. Everything is in a file cabinet, locked up, and the key is hidden. And nobody has access to it ever. It's a little bit more inconvenient, but at least I know, because especially being blind, that if someone's in my home, they cannot get my personal information because it's locked up.
So can you talk about a little bit about the whole thing? So you knew Guy for quite a while, and then you began to lose your eyesight. How did he do what he did? And what did he do anyway? I mean, how did he take advantage of you, and how did he do it?
Well, you know, sometimes people, they just take an opportunity that's presented to them. So, you know, he was a friend of mine for a long time. And when I started losing my eyesight, I didn't qualify for help where I was living because I wasn't on Medicaid. So he offered to take me because I couldn't drive. to the doctor, which happened to be, 2 hours away. And he actually told the doctor, who said he had to do surgery, but he wouldn't do it because I would be bandaged. I could still see a little bit out of my one eye, but it was really bad. And so he said I'd have to be bandaged and it would be total black. He didn't want me to be alone. So my friend said, oh, I can take care of her. She can stay with me and my family while she's recovering. And he told the doctor that he was a nurse. And you see, these people are pretty insidious. So they plan this stuff. You could look up anything on the internet, and it's really easy to portray yourself as someone that you're not. Obviously, he was not a nurse, but at the time, I believed him because he was my friend. And I thought, okay, I have a really good friend that's really supporting me during a crisis that I'm going through. And he, I was staying with him and his family, and I stayed on the couch. And I'd go to the bathroom, I'd use to take a shower, stuff like that. I didn't bring my pocketbook with me. I didn't bring my wallet with me. I didn't think I had to. And apparently he helped himself to the information in my wallet, in my pocketbook, using a camera phone, taking a picture of it. And this way he was able to portray himself as me on the internet.
And how did you... I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, it's just amazing.
What was the first sign that you knew something, that something might be wrong?
I had always put my money in my savings account. And I never looked at my savings account because that was my retirement money. And I, being that I was losing my eyesight, I didn't have to worry because it was in the bank. And it was safe. At least that's what I thought. And I sold my car because I could no longer drive. And I went to the bank with the woman that bought my car. And I gave the bank manager the check that the woman had given me. She had the same bank account that I did. And I asked the bank manager how much was the balance in my account after the deposit. And there was nothing left. And I was dumbfounded. I was like, where did my money go? At that point, the woman that had given me the check, I had asked her to leave. And they said, oh, it went to your E-Trade account. I said, what E-Trade account? And it had been removed from my bank account over a period of 4 months. And the bank never told me.
As I recall, he made a joint E-Trade account, right? So
he did it online. He had my information and he opened up a joint account online using my information that he had taken with pictures on his camera phone. So you see, this is Deb, this is Deborah, and here I am, and E-Trade has since, by the way, changed its policy. They no longer do this as a result of what happened to me. But at that time, you did not have to speak to anybody personally, so he was able to open it and say that whatever he'd said to get this in a joint account and put my name down as primary, by the way. So I was just dumbfounded.
I'm sure you're more than dumbfounded.
I didn't even know what to do, and that's why I wrote the book, because I went to the police, I went to went to the bank. They didn't know what to do. They kept saying, oh, you must have given him your permission. How could he have your information? And you don't even think about it. You don't realize how your information can be turned against you to their benefit. It's insane.
How did you prove to your bank that he did not get permission from you to do these things?
At first, I didn't. I went to a lawyer, and I showed everything to the lawyer. And the first lawyer said to me, this is kind of weird. I've never had this kind of case before. I don't understand it. And he tried to talk to the bank, but it didn't really go anywhere. Lawyer number two was able to do more research and did believe me, but he thought it was a civil case, not criminal. So I had to go through a third lawyer who actually had, information about cyber Prime, and he knew about this kind of scam. And he said, oh, yeah, this happens all the time. And I had to give him my information. I had to give him my bank statements, and I had to give him my personal stuff and a whole bunch of the police reports, everything. And he went after the police, and he went after E-Trade and forced them to, you know, come through, because they initially were saying that it wasn't their fault, but he went after their records. And it, the other thing was too, at first, the police tried to get E-Trade to release their recordings and their information. They refused to do it. So I contacted the Securities and Exchange Commission. The Securities and Exchange Commission, I was very lucky to get a person that knew about identity theft and knew about this kind of crime, which really kind of surprised me. I didn't realize it was that prevalent. And he said, listen, the state police, their jurisdiction ends at the border. My jurisdiction does not. I'm federal. They have to give me the information. They have to comply. They can't not comply. If they do, they're in big trouble. That's how he was able to get the recordings, and that's how he was able to find out what he did. And if you read in my book, he really manipulated E-Trade. Oh, yeah, she's not available. Oh, yeah, she gave me permission, all this other stuff that they believed. So,
well, not only that,
lawyer number three, you know, go ahead.
I sort of read that you put all the transcripts of all the calls that he made with
E-Trade. Yeah.
And he did everything you describe. In addition to that, he, you know, they needed more documentation because they had frozen the account. And the documentation, which struck me as reasonable, except that he stole it from, you know, took it from your house or whatever he did.
Yeah.
Took care of it.
Yep.
You know, didn't take him very long. You know, he did it. So, I mean, it's sort of striking reading and sort of thinking about this. This, of course, was awful that that's happened to you. But I guess my question to you, I worked in a mutual funds at another bank, and I was thinking about this. How would I have reacted under these circumstances as a customer service rep trying to support the customer, right? That's what we're trained to do. You know, we don't know anything about fraud. You know, are we supposed to believe that every customer who calls us is a fraudster? That we would lose business in a hurry if we did that.
Right.
So I was trying to sort of think through. Because the customer service reps, from my perspective, from reading a thing as a customer service, did everything they're supposed to do, right? The problem is not with the customer service people, is with the trading company. I don't know.
Not exactly. Actually, the problem was with my bank.
Even more so.
Yeah, my bank just let the money go out. They never questioned it. And being blind, I lived in a small community. And they knew me. They knew I was losing my eyesight. And I had a friend that was bringing me to the bank every month to deposit money. And so she and I would stand in front of the teller, and I'd make another deposit that I did every month. And I never, ever did anything different. And it was totally out of character. And the bank never caught it. The bank just went along and let it fly out and never said anything to me while I was standing right in front of her. That's what got us. That's what really happened. I mean, they could have stopped it right then and there.
Yeah.
So the banks told me, which kind of surprised me, your money is not safe with the bank. They don't have to tell you that there's something funny going on with your account. They don't have to tell you that they suspect anything.
Fortunately, my bank, which is a well-known bank nationally, has a fraud department that you can go to and address these concerns. Plus, people who have money in that bank have insurance within the bank. Their money is insured. Is your money insured by the bank?
Well, my new one, yeah.
Okay.
The other thing was, too, was that I had asked the bank, because I was losing my eyesight, to what they call flag my account. And they didn't. They said the computer was down. They didn't tell me. They said, oh, the computer's down. That's how we got the last amount of my money. Because they never even told me, oh, we can't flag it because the account is down. The computer's down.
So how long, I just, how long you asked them to flag the account, mm-hmm. and how long did it take them to do it?
How long did it take them to flag the account? Yeah. They never did.
So nope. Because leak, it does that put them in hot water? I mean, that you obviously asked them to do it. They chose not to do it, right? If this wasn't this was a choice that somebody made not to honor.
They claimed it wasn't their fault because it was a computer problem. So that's one of the reasons why I was able to get some money back from the bank, because they had to admit that they were in the wrong, but they wouldn't admit full responsibility. They said, well, E-Trade's partly responsible because E-Trade allowed the account to even be opened. So the bank and E-Trade shared responsibility. That didn't get me all my money back, but at least then, and again, this was all because of the lawyer that I had that knew cybercrime, and he went after them and he said, you can't do this. This is not acceptable. If you don't have a good lawyer who doesn't know what they're doing, they can get away with it. The district attorney in where I live didn't know about cybercrime. He couldn't understand how it could happen.
So what?
It's a relatively new trend in society. It needs to catch up. Just now being introduced to the concept of cybercrime.
Yes.
So what year did this all take place? I mean,
2000. I started losing my eyesight in 2008. He started taking my money in 2012, and he withdrew everything in my savings account in a period of a little less than 4 months, all gone. And he would take, according to the paperwork, which, by the way, we had to force the bank to hand over the information. $1,500 a day, $1,000 a day, totally out of my spending range. Totally. I never, ever did that. Matter of fact, they could show that going years back, I never even touched that account. I just deposited. I never withdrew.
Where is Guy today?
He's still floating out there. I looked him up a few years ago, and somebody's father was complaining about him because he stole money from his daughter.
Why isn't he in jail where he belongs?
Because the district attorney never arrested him. I don't know why. I have a feeling that he didn't want it known that he didn't know his job. I've spoken to the FBI. The FBI explained to me that they couldn't get involved until there was an arrest. Once he was arrested, the FBI could take over, and then they could go after him. They'd done it before. But because he was never arrested, there was nothing that could be done.
So it isn't clear that according to New York State law, what happened to you was indeed a crime. It should be a crime.
Correct.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be. It clearly should be a crime. But there was a gray area, as if I understood your book, between a mm-hmm. civil matter and a criminal matter. And mm-hmm. I hope it's been changed since then, because it's ridiculous what happened to you, and it's ridiculous that he's still out there.
I don't know if they changed it. I can tell you that I did call a senator 2 years ago, and it hadn't been changed as of that date 2 years ago. It still had not been updated to reflect being a felony. The funny thing is, too, and I just want to explain to the readers, to the listeners, rather, sorry. Each state has its own law.
Right.
They don't cross state lines. So while it's a federal crime, identity theft is a federal crime punishable by federal felony law. Each state is its own entity, and they can make up their own law. If the state makes an arrest, then they can turn it over to the feds and it gets escalated from there. But there has to be an arrest first, because the states are autonomous. You see how that works?
Yeah, I do understand. And I'm just sort of flummoxed that, New York State is the financial capital of the country. As you know.
I,
and I really wonder why New York State is so slow on this, or they haven't done anything at all.
My takeaway from the senators that I'd spoken to is that the banks did not want the law because they didn't want to be held responsible.
And
the banks have a big lobby. Yes. And imagine that is right.
So a couple of questions. So let's focus on the bank that you were that you had the savings account in. What do you wish the bank had? That sounds like an obvious question, but what do you wish the bank had done differently so that this wouldn't have happened in the first place?
All they had to do was say, hey, by the way, you've been spending a lot of money and just want to check and make sure everything's okay. Yeah. And that would have alerted me. Anything that would have said something, they said nothing, not one word. And my friend that was with me at the bank, when we found out, I was practically in tears, and she was shocked. She turned to me. She said, we've gone to that bank every month, and I'm standing next to you, and I know for sure you never touched that money. And how could they not say anything to you?
So
she was shocked.
I wonder if it's happened to other people, but I have several credit cards, and once in a while I'll get a phone call from the fraud department saying something along the lines of, there's an unusual thing from your account. If you spend $834 for this, and it seems to be an ongoing thing, at least from credit card companies, you know what I'm talking about? Credit cards companies seem to do it, but your bank did not.
No.
No.
Maybe because back then it wasn't as prevalent. I don't know. Like you had said, maybe it wasn't on their radar. I hope it is now. I'm no longer with that bank, and I'm not going to ever go back to that bank. But, I really hope that people take this seriously. And again, thank you for doing this call, because people don't realize that you really under their purview to protect you or not. I know Wells Fargo, because I had spoken with a few different banks, they will provide identity theft protection for a fee. You have to pay them to monitor your bank account. It's which kind of surprises me. You'd think it would be.
Should be a job that they can already do as part of their original responsibility.
Yes. Well, that's how they make money. See, they sell stuff. So that's another thing that they sell now. Identity theft protection in the bank. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's what they do.
I mean, there are, I am not an expert in these matters, but there are algorithms out there that could be established, to monitor the kind of stuff.
Of course, it
shouldn't be this. It shouldn't be that hard to do.
No.
But we live in a time. This was a community bank, right? This wasn't one of the big banks. This is a community bank.
No, it's a community bank.
Who knew you? I mean, that's what I find so amazing, that somebody didn't say, are you, it would have been the common courtesy thing to do. Legally, they didn't have to do it, right? The law says you're not required to do it. But from a community relations and from a sort of a courteous customer service thing, this strikes me as something that should be done. In a situation
again, this is another reason why I wrote the book, because you can't be complacent and assume that they're going to watch out for your best interest, even with a small community bank. Oh, yeah, we know everybody. We know your neighbors. We're going to take care of you. No. No.
So
I want to point out also.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Deb.
Well, I used checks, and that's how he got into my bank account. He used what they call an ACH, an authorized check. And I questioned the bank about that, and they said, why do you have to have the entire account number on the check along with all the other information? I mean, can't you limit it? And they said no. And the reason they said no is because it was easier for them to make sure that the account was secure, which I found ridiculous. So you're telling me that you can't even change that information. You have to leave it all out there so that the thief has all the information that they can steal from you.
They have a lot of numbers on all of our personal cards nowadays. You look at your debit card. I don't know if you have a debit card or not. Okay. There are 16 digits on your debit account. plus another 3 on your PIN number, plus another 3, which is a security number. That's 22 numbers right there on one card.
Let me explain to you about a debit card. Don't use a debit card. I would never use a debit card. If someone steals that card, they'll wipe you out. You can't do anything. You cannot get the money back. You're done. All they have to do is, oh, it's a debit card. They go spend it in 2 seconds, and you're finished. At least with a credit card, you have some protection. Usually they'll say, well, okay, we'll help you recover the money, but you have to pay the first 50. At least you don't lose everything. But with a debit card, that's not the case.
We shouldn't even have to pay the first 50. It's not our fault.
Nope. I know. But that's the way it is. You know, it's the banks. They have more control over us than we realize. Or we realize, but we don't think it's ever going to happen to us.
So I want to go back to E-Trade, because you have a whole chapter of all the transcripts that.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think? I remember I'm talking about this from my experience as a customer service rep at a mutual fund company. I understand that E-Trade wasn't their fault per se. What could they have done differently? I mean, if you were training customer service people to observe things like this, what advice would you give them? You know, sort of the folks who answer the calls and are trying to support the customer. What kinds of things would you encourage them to think about, given your experience?
Okay, so big red flag number one. You have a person calling up and saying, hi, I'm opening an account, but I'm not the primary account holder this other person is, but I'm acting on their behalf. Call the primary account holder and double check. That 2 seconds phone call. And that would have stopped it right there. They didn't even do that. They never even contacted me. Nothing. Well, the thing of it is, too, is that if you read my book, so what happened was he opened up the account with my information. He put his He called them up and he gave them a copy of my identification online. And then he had my address. Within 24 hours, not even 12 hours, he went back in and he changed the address, so had all the information on that account sent to him. They didn't catch that. They didn't think about it. That's why I had no idea. I never received any information, any call, nothing, because he had everything sent to him. And that was another reason my lawyer was able to nail them. He's like, you've got to be kidding me.
So I know you won the case in court, right? I mean, you know, years for it to get to. But once it got to court, it was a pretty quick process, right? The judge said that, you know, the guy is wrong. He needs to pay it back, right? And then, but collecting from the guy is a problem. Talk about that.
Mm-hmm. You can't get blood from the stone. That's what the state police told me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, listen, he stole my money. He bought furniture. He bought this. He bought that. Make him sell the stuff that he bought with the money that he stole from me. No, we can't do that. So that's what they say. Oh, I don't have any money. I can't pay it back. Oh, well.
And most of these people do this because they like to spend lots of money and live the high life. I mean, let's be honest about it. You know, they're not investing money. They're spending it to do whatever, but it's nothing, you know. So did you get any money back from him?
No.
No.
He didn't have to pay a dime back, and he never was arrested. No, I can't.
Not even in a lawsuit?
Nope. Mm-mm.
Because
he doesn't have any money. They told me that it wouldn't be worth it because he doesn't have anything. They can't get blood from the stone. That's the exact words from the state police.
He never gets money?
Even the BMW that he was driving was leased. He didn't even own that. They checked his bank accounts. In his name, he had no money. He spent all the money that he stole from me in 4 months, every single penny gone.
But I'm sure he gets some sort of an income, even if it's from the government. You have to live.
I have no idea. I agree with you. I have no idea. But they said it wasn't enough because he needs to live.
Right.
So it's okay because he needs money to live. You can't take money from him. Then he can't pay rent. Then he can't eat. Okay, what about me? My house was in foreclosure. I almost lost my home. That doesn't count.
We have about 20 minutes. I'm sorry, Deb. I was just going to let the listeners know that we have about 20 minutes left in the program. And I do want to invite the participants who are listening live right now on the streams to come in and ask you questions, if that's all right, Deborah.
Absolutely. And if anybody out there has anything to share, if they themselves have become a victim, please feel free to do so, because it happens so much more than people realize.
Before I ask Tricia if there are any hands raised, I just wanted to ask you to tell the listeners where they can find your book.
You can go to Amazon and you can download it on Amazon. It's VB103152, and it's under the book name Identity Theft, A Victim's Search for Justice, by myself, Deborah E. Joyce. And I also have a blog that I write about under DeborahEJoyce.com, and I put information about the latest scam, the latest article. I also write, as Bob mentioned, in Consumer Vision magazine, a monthly column. Thank you, Bob, for allowing me to do that.
That's my pleasure. You're informing our readers of a very important topic. And for those people who don't know, it's Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H. I think that's important. There are two ways to spell Deborah.
There are lots of ways.
I want to make sure the listeners know that that's how you spell it.
Thank you,
Trish, do we have any hands raised at this time?
Yes, we do. We actually have three currently.
Thank you.
Now we have four. The first one is Jane T.
Jane T, yes, welcome.
Welcome, and thank you. Deborah, your voice has so much stamina in it these days. I love hearing that. I also really appreciate your compassion and how careful you are not to be pissed off on the air. But I have had that happen. My husband and I live with our son. We have bank accounts in a very wonderful bank setting. And I have my personal accounts set up so that I get an alert if any amount over blank, whatever my blank choice is, they call me or they email me and then I call them. I also get reports on all of our accounts every once a week or every 2 weeks. But those are crucial things. And thanks for the tip about a debit card. I think I'm going to go cut it up now. You know, because I got stuck, and maybe others have, and then I'll go, between thinking, oh, I don't ever want to use a credit card. I always want to pay for things in cash and have them done. But that's not a healthy way to do things in our world. So I'll listen, but I appreciate your comments very, very much. And for anybody
who
gets calls from people, sometimes you'll hear a little click when the phone connects, and you know right then that clicker is a wicked thing. But all the best to all of you and to all of us as we help each other and get on through this. So,
Jane,
absolutely.
If you don't mind, I'm going to impersonate that sound. When you get a robocall or an AI call, the first thing that you normally hear is
Yes, just something quite like that.
Like somebody popping their head out from underwater.
And that way, then you automatically know you can say, you can say whatever you want, but you can handle it either with grace and respect or not.
Or hang up the phone, which is...
hanging up the phone is so easy. Sometimes you get after them.
Well, I'm getting a bunch of these calls. Chinese. I got in that list, but they think I speak Chinese and whatever. That's really weird.
And by the way, I have signed up for the do not call, and it doesn't always work.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work very well. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Jane. And I'm sorry for what happened to you, but thank you for listening.
I really learned.
Thank you.
If you don't learn from a mistake, then you're going to make the same mistake again.
Yes.
Later, later. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jane.
Trish, yeah. Anyone else?
Yes, we have Tony.
Tony, how are you? Go ahead.
Thank you. Deborah, first of all, I feel for you. And also, I've been a victim of identity theft in the form of having to replace my credit card twice in the last 5 years. What a major disruption to life mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. At least it's a credit card. But you know what I wanted to ask you was, you know, we're all visually impaired, and I just feel
right.
we are at a disadvantage. We're vulnerable all the time about everything. So we're extra vulnerable when it comes to this stuff. It gets really scary. Any thoughts mm-hmm. about, you know, us as visually impaired people, you know, what we can do to protect ourselves maybe even more?
Well, as I said, lock everything up, because according to police, once you let somebody in your apartment, you've given them permission to everything that they can have access to. And it's he said, she said. You can't prove that you didn't give them the TV that they just walked out of with. So anything of valuable, lock it up. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's the way we live now. And I'm sorry to say it, but that's the best advice I can give you. Don't give people your information. Or give it as little as possible. Even if you go to a business and they say to you, oh, we need your whatever, social security number or something for identification, say no. I will give you the last four numbers, but I'm not giving you my entire number.
But would they accept
and
that?
If they say why, well, they have to. You just tell them no, I'll give you an alternative form, but I cannot because that's too sensitive. They have to. They can't force you. It's become so commonplace that it's just a matter of fact. Oh, just give us your social security number. Oh, just give us your birth date. Oh, just put it on Facebook. That's how we get in trouble.
You know, we all have different skill levels too. So the degree to which we can protect ourselves by doing things online, or whether we have to rely on other people, like Bob is mentioning very early on in today's podcast, that makes us more vulnerable sometimes. But these are the things that we have to figure out as visually impaired and blind people. You know, how do we become less vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the obvious thing is to pick your friends wisely, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's an easy one, right? It's easy to say. It's hard to do. And, I've been very fortunate. I've had very good, you know, reliable people. But, you know, it doesn't always work out.
Tony, thank you very
much. In my book, I talk about a neighbor that stole from her neighbor, the poor woman. She didn't realize. She thought this woman was her friend, and she even talked about it in court. You know, veterans are also vulnerable.
Yes.
Because there's so many different ways that they can steal. It's just uncanny.
Thank you, Anthony.
Trish?
Tony.
Okay, we have three hands. The next one is Paul.
Deborah, I have a quick comment and a question. My quick comment is, I'm wondering if or why the family had no idea that this guy was a, you know, professional thief and could have warned you about him. That's, you know, I just...
You mean his family?
Yes.
Guy's family.
Because his family was in denial and they just didn't, he never... disclosed to them that he was taking his friends out to the seafood place, 10 friends for a party. They didn't see that. And then as far as the outward trappings, he just said that he was working and they never questioned him. Sometimes you don't want to see what's in front of you.
Yeah.
Especially with your loved ones.
Yes.
Yeah. Deborah, I don't know if I'm taking it too, but my question really I wanted to ask was about Alexa. I'm not on the internet, but I use Alexa, you know, to go on websites or to, you know, listen to music. And so when I got on, that's through Wi-Fi, through my brother, she asked me, Alexa asked me, well, who is this and can I have your name so it can go into the cloud? If I give her my name, am I being vulnerable? Can the people tap into Alexa?
So here's the thing with Alexa, and I have an Alexa, but what you do, you have to change Alexa's name because everyone knows Alexa. So change it to Fuss Budget or something ridiculous like Doobidbapapa or something.
Or Echo then they can't or Computer.
No,
even Echo or Computer, that's too No, too easy. No. Seriously.
Wonderful. Thank you, Deborah.
Slipper fissure.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you. Yeah.
And then, the other thing, too, is every day, at the end of the day, you have to train yourself. Tell Alexa that you want to delete all voice recordings. It will do it.
Well, okay. It's not mute or anything, but any voice, delete all voice recordings that talk to Alexa. Is that what
you
mean?
So you can do it two ways. You could either say, delete all voice recordings, and it'll say, delete all voice recordings for a single day or for today. You say yes. But you can also delete every voice recording that you've ever had. Just say, delete all voice recording. Then it'll come back and it'll say, if I delete all the voice recordings, I might not work correctly. Do you still want me to delete them? You say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I checked with Amazon about that, and they said, oh, we need to keep a copy of your recordings, because if there's a problem with Alexa, we want to be able to look it up so that we can track and see where the problem occurs. So my thinking is, okay, don't delete it if there's a problem. But normally, just delete everything.
Yeah, well, that's easy. Okay, so to delete all voice recordings and change her name.
Yep.
Fantastic. Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome.
That sounds good to me.
All right. Next, we have area code 575970. Can you tell us who you are?
I think that's Beth.
I don't know.
Yeah, this is Beth from New Mexico.
Okay.
I was going to ask you, Deborah, what about entities like LifeLock and another thing coming up is Home Title Lock and all that?
No. I tried LifeLock, and it said, well, first of all, I wasn't a member when this happened. I signed up with LifeLock after the fact. But even still, they said, no, you have to be a member. But then I found out that even if you're a member, you have to prove that you were a victim of identity theft. It's your onus, not theirs. They will look at things. They say they go to bat for you, but really you're responsible. Ask them that question, and that's what they're going to tell you. You cannot put your financial information totally in their hands. It won't work.
You know what I find really strange about
promotion?
Sorry, Beth. Go ahead, Beth. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's just what I was going to say. And then because they advertised that another crime that's coming up real quickly is them stealing your house out from under you. Ask you to buy Home Title Lock.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, what I find really weird about LifeLock's advertising, and this may display a political bias of mine, that the two spokespeople I've heard promote LifeLock are Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Bill O'Reilly. At the very least, are very controversial people. In the case of Rudy Giuliani, yes, for a while, he was a very good mayor of New York City, but he's sort of fallen off the deep end. And how they would choose to select these people as their spokespeople is beyond me. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you think these people are good people, they're so controversial that I don't know why they would choose them. It's I'm sorry, I'm changing the topic a little bit, but it for me, hearing those commercials, like, I don't trust these people. I don't trust their spokespeople, for what it's worth.
So are there any entities out there comparable to LifeLock that are better than them?
You have to take responsibility. You have to take control. They won't do it for you. They're big banks. They're big businesses. They have lobbyists. They have people that go to bat for them. They pay off people in the government. I'm sorry. Since this happened to me, I hate to say it, I don't trust anybody.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I mean, you really, anybody out there that's a victim, you know, they're going to tell you the same thing. It's really, really hard to trust anybody anymore. Big banks especially. Look what happened with AIG and Lehman Brothers. You got to trust these people? Forget it.
That's true. It's true.
Thank you, Beth.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next, Trish?
Nora's iPad.
Yeah, hi. I'm so sorry to hear that you've been victimized, you know, with a virus person who did identity theft. But my question is, what are you going to do in the future about this whole situation?
Well, the new bank that I'm in, I have a flag on my account. I am able to call in to my bank, and I do call in every single day. There is a window of 30 days, if you, or a little bit less than 30 days, 29 days. If you let them know there's a problem, they have to investigate it. But I'm so paranoid now that I call in every day. I call my credit card, and I told my credit card what was going on. I let them know so that they will call me if there's a problem, as some people had said on the phone. But I also don't rely on that. I call in myself once a week and check my credit card company just to make sure. And there was a couple of glitches a couple of times. An Amazon account, you know, they get in there 10 cents, 20 cents, and they're like, that wasn't me. And they had to fix it. Somebody tried to break into my account. You have to be diligent. It's a new world. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I know we're busy, but it's
true. Yeah.
Think of the alternative.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else?
We have one more hand. Deanna?
Deanna, next week's guest.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say that I have had two friends. One had her sister stealing money from her account when she was out of town going to guide dog school, and she left her sister to pay her bills. Her sister had a gambling problem she didn't know about, gambled away what was in the account. The bill, her telephone company tracked her down at the seeing eye to say, why aren't you paying your bill? And that was how she found out that her sister had this issue. The other person was married to a sighted man. Her parents set up a large trust for her, and he was raiding the trust. So it's not just the stranger danger or the person on the phone or the email that looks suspicious. I've been getting tons of them recently saying, we have your order. And one of them was for $2,000. And of course, they want you to follow the link to go.
I get those.
Yeah. Don't ever follow links from something you don't recognize.
Common sense.
Yeah, just don't go there.
Don't act.
Yeah. And there's a lot of scare tactics out there that they'll, as seniors and as people with disabilities, and with a last name like Noriega, I get threatening calls from saying that a contraband package has arrived addressed to me, you know. Yada yada. So anything that doesn't sound right, don't buy it because
right.
You know, sometimes it's so silly that you can recognize it right away. I had someone call me up and said, I just won a car.
That's so nice.
Deanna, PayPal's guilty of that too. Well, somebody who thinks they're PayPal or wants to identify themselves as PayPal. This is PayPal. Mm-hmm. You've just got $2,000. We know better.
Yeah. If it sounds too good, it is. And if it sounds like something, I mean, Customs does not call people on the phone with a very authoritarian dragnet voice and tell you, you know, we've got this package. It's those kinds of things just don't happen. So you have to be careful, particularly if you're a senior citizen, because they think you're stupid.
And
I want to stress something that Deanna said. You know, this is more likely to happen. It's like many crimes, you know, with somebody you know, right? You know, that's the insidious part of all of this. You know, that and
if you have somebody reading your mail for you and helping with your accounts, that is a person that can really screw you over before you realize it.
And quickly, I just want to mention for the final few seconds, how about these calls from people who claim that your social security number has been hacked from a company out in Texas or out in Arizona? Mm. And when we know, it makes us nervous because we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's common too.
The other thing too. Yeah.
And we have about 30 seconds, Deb.
No, about being disabled, I just want to mention too, the police, he told police that I was mentally incapable of handling my money because I was losing my eyesight and I needed someone to take care of my money, and the police believed him. So it's not only us. We have to really train law enforcement and cyber people what to do because they are not trained, and that's also part of the big problem.
Good advice and good thoughts, Deborah, but we have to close. Thank you very much for enlightening us and making us aware of these situations. It's important that we act and that we are proactive and that we do our best to protect ourselves from identity theft. Deborah Joyce,
thank
ladies and gentlemen,
me.
Author of Identity Theft, A Victim's Search for Justice. Look her up on Amazon. It's DeborahAJoyce.com. Am I correct, Deb?
Yes, DeborahAJoyce.com, yeah.
Okay, and next week, you just heard Deanna briefly. She's going to be our guest. She is an author, and she'll be updating us on her work next week on In Perspective. Thank you, everybody. Our time has run out. Peter, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Deb. Y'all.
And go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.